Well, we see who's hard of hearing that didn't hear the announcement this morning that I was going to preach, but everybody that showed up, no. But I do appreciate it. Did you say that was 3:15, Robbie?
Yes.
3:15 would be the song of invitation if you want to go ahead and mark that. And Jesus said in John chapter 15 and verse 13, "Greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends." And when we think about the statement, it carries, it approaches the subject of love, which of course is the central theme of the New Testament. And if you think about it, it's the central theme of the Old Testament. It's really the central theme of everything that has ever been. Go back to the creation of man. Go back to, the plan that God put in place. It was all about it was all about love. It was everything is about love. How many songs? How many sonnets? How many poems? How many Broadway musicals? How many whatever? It's all got love at the very center of it. We think about it; it's the greatest command. Everything is centered around love. Even hatred is centered around love. If you think about it, like, well, wait a minute, Chris, now you're getting out of hand. Well, really, hatred is centered around love, because what would hatred be if you didn't have it? It didn't have something to contrast hatred to. When we look at somebody that maybe is hateable by society, such as a great sinner, maybe somebody that's a pedophile, or somebody that's a drunk driver that hurts somebody, well, we can evoke some degree of distaste or dislike for that person. But when the hatred really becomes intense is whenever something happens that causes that, that when they've hurt somebody close to us that we love. So it bounced off of love, it creates or generates that intense and immense hatred. But it is the greatest command. We understand that it's the center point of everything. We understand that without love we are nothing. We studied that in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 recently. That without love we are a sounding brass. We are absolutely nothing. When we look at what Jesus said, as he answered the Pharisees there in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 36 and following, they asked, the Pharisees asked him, of course they were trying to trick Jesus. They said, you know, what is the greatest command? And he said, well, it's to love the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Now that's fairly clear. He says the second one is very similar to it. It's to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, what did the Pharisees start doing? We understand they are Pharisees, we understand that they are, we're trying to trip him up and twist his words. But it seems, if it were anybody else that asked the question, it would seem logical. Well, who is our neighbor? It's a fairly logical question. Who exactly are we to love? We have to ask that sometimes today. We ask, well, now, we're supposed to love our neighbors ourselves. Well, what if we have somebody that's involved in idolatry that Robbie preached on this morning? What if a Muslim next door lives next door to us? What if one of those drunk drivers that we dislike so much, what if they live next door to us? Do we love them? It's a question we might ask. And then the next most logical question, which was not asked in that scenario, was how do we love? But it might be a logical question to ask. How do we love? What is love? You know, we see people all the time that have all kinds of different ideas of what love is. And is it an action or is it a lack of action in a particular situation? Sometimes I think that I can illustrate my love more by saying, I think, by just not doing anything. Sometimes I can illustrate my love more by doing something. Sometimes my problem is I jump in the middle of things too quick, and if I would back off and let things sort themselves out, it might be better. Is it a toughness or a firmness, or is it discipline? Is it kind words, or is it harsh words? Is it favors or service? Is it listening? Is it understanding? Is it empathy? Is it sympathy? Or is it patience? What is it? And is it universally applied? And I think I'm hoping that you'll see that it's not. But what we could do is we could home in on categories of love expression. You know, I've always said hone in all my life. I'm going to hone in on it. that came up as a little red line underneath it, and I looked it up. That was wrong. So I changed it. It's not natural for me to say home in, but we're going to home in like a homing pigeon. That's apparently right, according to Google. But we got two simple principles here we need to understand. One is that we are commanded to love, and we are responsible for love, and love is everything. And then the second principle is that people are different. That's the very complicated thing here, is that people are different. They have differences in their gifts. They have differences in their background. We talked there again in 1 Corinthians. We talked about recently the differences in spiritual gifts. And tied in with that is just a pure and simple truth that people are different. They got different experiences. They got different cultures. You know, we've been fairly homogeneous, we would say, maybe here in the United, here in Rockcastle and Pulaski counties. You know, everybody's a whole lot the same. We understand. But now we get a lot of people moving in that are from different parts of the country, and they don't understand our ways. They don't understand when we say ain't and nary. As a matter of fact, this fellow from India that day was a friend of Dana's. He asked my mom one time, he said, "Miss Craig," he said, "what does nary mean?" I had nary an idea. People have different rearings. They have different values. They have different parents. They've had different experiences that caused them to feel different ways about things. How do you create what people interpret as love? Sometimes it's education. Sometimes it's trauma that's influenced it. Well, what happens many times is that we have love miscommunications. Think about this. Have you ever thought someone's actions were adverse or hateful, but later found out they were showing love to you? I think about an old fellow that I grew up around, and he was a crotchety old fellow, and he was, well, I'll just tell you who it was, because I think you'll agree, and he would have agreed if he was still with us. His name was Omer Payne, and he was crotchety, and right down to the core. But he liked me, and I liked him, and we were friends. And my grandfathers both died before I was born, and he was just kind of, in a way, he kind of served a little bit of that role. And he was grumpy and crotchety, and he cussed like a sailor, and he drank like a fish. But he was good to me, and he would do anything in the world for me. And you know, I could very easily say, well, he's so grumpy and hateful, he must not like me. But no, really, he did. He liked me, and I liked him. Have you ever tried to communicate with someone who speaks only Spanish or German? What if I came up here tonight, and I can't do it, but what if somebody else came up here and preached this sermon in German? There probably wouldn't be hardly anybody in here that would be able to grasp a whole lot of the sermon. What about, there's a lot of times when people manifest or illustrate their love in a different way than what you're used to. And maybe it can cause some problems, and I think that's where I want to go to tonight. As it turns out, there are five love languages, and I would challenge you to find a sixth one. But you probably can come up with a different dialect. But most actions and most manifestations of love, they all come down to one of these five categories. If you think about it, and I know that if you've not been exposed to this concept before, then maybe it may take some time. You say, "Well, I can think of chocolate." No, well, that's not really a love language. That would be a gift, or maybe an act of service if you made it. A quality time is one of them. Acts of service, I'll go through these individually. Giving or receiving of gifts, physical touch, or words of affirmation. That's the five love languages, the five categories that you probably have to attribute just about everything that ever happens that's an expression of love to one of those five categories. And I didn't originate in this, and really and truly, nor did Gary Chapman originate this. This is really an observation that he made and he wrote down after about 20 or 25 years of marital counseling and family counseling. He observed that almost every single marital problem that had this at the center of it, or every single marriage had this at the center of it, that people interpreted love in one of these five ways. What he later found out, and what I've discovered, is that this is very biblically based, and it's a very common sense way of embracing our call to love each other. Because there again, we go back to that question: how do we love somebody? Well, it's very difficult sometimes to know how to love someone, and love them in the way that they want to be loved. So let's look at these individually. Start with quality time. quality time. There are people that, and whenever I say that these are different, there are nearly everybody at they ascribe to one of these five as their main love language, and maybe two. There's some degree that everyone expresses or interprets every single one of these in their own lives, but there's a primary for each of these. So think about this as we go through it. I passed that survey out or laid it back there this morning, and here is the key to it. So, and it's back there now. So on your way out, if you haven't already, you're welcome to reach up and grab one. But this kind of explains some of this to you, and I'm going to go through it. So hopefully as we go, you'll be able to figure out which one you are. And then you may be able to figure out what the person sitting next to you, or the person that you're married to, or the person that you gave birth to, or the person that gave birth to you, or the person that's your best friend. You may be able to figure out their love language a little bit, and it might help shed light on some of the times when you get a little bit crossways. And that may be contributing to it. But this quality time person, you know, they're the kind of person that likes long walks or time sitting quiet in quiet conversation. It's a personal connection. It's an attentiveness to each other. It's undivided attention. It's laying the phone away, putting the phone up and no texting during the middle of it, or watching TV out of the corner of your eye or whatever. It's looking them in the eye. You can think back to a time that you met someone that you really, really liked, like maybe your spouse if you married, or maybe some special person of the other gender that you really had a great crush on. And whenever they came around and wanted to talk to you, it was really the undivided attention went to that person. It's a shame we can't maintain that throughout our years of marriage, because that in itself would probably solve a lot of the problems. But anyway, vacations where work and other things are put aside. You know, it's very hard for some of us to ever get around to the mentality that if we are going to take a week off, we're not getting paid. Not only are we not getting paid, we're spending money, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. But maybe it's worth it for the quality time if you're married to, or if you're a part of a relationship with a quality time person. And this is not all about marriage, by the way. I want to point that out. Since Gary Chapman wrote this book 10 or 15, 20 years ago, I don't know, I read it probably 10, 12 years ago, and I really liked this, but I noticed that he's written five love languages for teenagers and for other relationships too. It applies to every relationship that we can have. This could be something where we take a break in the middle of the day and go out to eat lunch and so forth. So that's quality time. Keep in mind that the opposite, and I've never heard him point this out too much about each of these languages, but utilizing this to hurt somebody, to know that this is their love language, is quality time, and so I'm going to punish him or I'm going to ignore that language, is a problem too. We'll get that as we go by. Acts of service, that's the other one. Acts of service is not to be confused with day-to-day responsibilities. It's also not to be confused with being a doormat, that you just got to run around and hop up and run every time somebody says anything. But it is something that we need to keep in mind, that there are certain people that if you are ignoring them, helping them in things, they take it very, very personally. They take it very personally, and maybe whether they should or shouldn't, they look at it as a very personal affront to the love that you should be showing them. It's anticipation of tasks or acts that are interpreted as being thoughtful. And it may be little tasks like making a glass of tea for you, bringing napkins to the table when you're eating out on the porch, and thinking of something like that. But it may also be something even bigger than that, that is going to be something, and this is maybe maybe relational between church members. It may be a marital relation, and it may be the church in general. That we need to be thinking about this. Volunteering when someone is needing help, that's a good act of service. And that is something that somebody who is this kind of person is going to do, and that's the way they're showing that they love you. This is a very complicated thing, because we've got to be able to receive that. we've also got to realize that they're saying that if I'm not an acts of service person and they're trying to help me with things, maybe I need to say, I think they're trying to say they love me. Whereas maybe I'm a quality time person. And I need to accept it for what it is. That they're trying, they're doing what they know to do to show me that they love me. Being responsible or accountable when the lack thereof affects someone negatively, that's a big one. You know, I affected Robbie tonight negatively because I was not responsible by remembering that I was on to lead the singing. Oh, I remembered it, but I just let it get pushed out of my mind for some reason. And you know, he had to scramble up here and pick out some songs at the last minute. So that affected him. My lack of responsibility affected him. And I know Robbie says he's a big guy. He'll take it, and he'll take it like the duck feathers on his back. But I don't need to do that a lot because that is that's a thoughtless thing. It was not good for me to do that. You know, this includes things like cleaning, fixing, helping, holding. If you've got children and if you're a mother, I bet you there's a lot of mothers that are acts of service people. And when the house is a mess, there's a big old mess in the kitchen. Let's say, for instance, somebody says, I'm going to come over and cook you dinner. Well, how about you cook it and come and bring it over? How about that? No, I'm going to come over to your house and I'm going to cook you dinner. Now, that's a fine gesture. Everybody appreciates that. But the problem is they're going to use your kitchen. And now, ladies and men who cook, what is the worst part of the cooking process? Cleaning up, all right? So they cook you a big old souffle or some big fancy dish, and it's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever was. And then they say, well, you got to go, see you later. And the kitchen looks like a tornado just went through it. Now, that's not very thoughtful, is it? That's really, sometimes we jeopardize our good act by not being thoughtful about what is actually going into this. So, next one. What is the next one? Why won't it go? Giving gifts. So we got quality time, we had acts of service, we got giving gifts, and giving gifts is little tokens of affection or thought, not generally large gifts. Generally, jewelry companies love this, as you can see. Excuse me, Hallmark loves this when you care enough to give the very best. You know, Walmart gift card for the anniversary should have a few extra letters on the end of there. That is, that's probably not going to get it for a gifts person. Whereas, if you are if you're married to somebody that's not a gifts person and you miss it, you probably might get away with it. Might get away with a gift card. But somebody that is a gift person, not going to get away with it. Mary Lee and I are neither gift person people, really. And we will get each other gifts for occasions. And it's okay, you know, if we're a day late or a day early, or sometimes we're going to be out of town, and it's like, oh, by the way, here's your birthday present because next week is your birthday. It's important, but it's not like it's devastating. And like it would be if we forgot, if we were gift-giving people. Christmas time gifts, you know, you got this obligatory thing, and there's always somebody in the family that's a gift person. It's like, oh, everything is gathered around, you know, centers around that thing, and you got to be sensitive to these things. Because some people, that's the way they interpret or receive love or give love. And then the fourth one is the physical touch. And this is, there again, this is not just contained to marriage, because this is appropriate physical touch. I'm strong in that one, and you know, it may be a handshake or a fist bump, or maybe I may pat you on the back, or I may give you a hug. This can even be a congregational thing. I was out in California worshiping with this congregation, and my first Sunday there, the black congregation, and this fellow said, he didn't do make an announcement at the end. He said, "We want to get to know you if you're visiting with us." And he said, "I'm just going to go ahead and warn you." He said, "We're a hugging congregation here." And he said, "If you don't like to be hugged," he said, "you better get on out." Well, I didn't get out quick enough, and they started hugging me all over the place. And that's all right, because I'm a physical affection person. I like that warmth of the other person, whether it's their hand or their fist bump or pat them on the back. And the kids are that way. You know, you'll notice if you got more than one kid, they'll vary in how close they want to be to you. And whenever our kids were little, there was one of them, and I won't say who it is, would be sitting right against you all the time, or stop in the middle of the dinner and come around the table and hug everybody. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love that. I'm all for that. Oh, by the way, physical touch. You know, be careful that we don't withdraw or withhold that from people. We don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. We don't want to withhold it and hurt people's feelings with it too. Our words of affirmation. That's one where, you know, we're given verbal encouragement. You can do it. You're very good at this, at whatever. I appreciate your hard work. Now, we got to be careful and not blow smoke. You know, this got to be genuine. We don't want to create a monster either, because sometimes we brag on folks to the point that they just think they're exalted and up on high, and that's not really appropriate either. We've got to I've made an extra slide here. I'm trying to get the fifth one on here. I wanted to point out down here at the bottom, this really includes good communication and affirmation. It's letting each other know how we feel. Because we can do a lot of damage with this one. This one is really more in line with just being in tune with the people around you, as far as knowing, you know, is everything okay? If, you know, let's say somebody brought their grand youngin with them, and they had a pet tarantula. Let's say Pat had a pet tarantula, or Pat, JJ had a pet tarantula. Perish the thought, Pat. But anyway, so, you know, the tarantula's supposed to be in a cage at home, and then all of a sudden she looks down, and I make a point, and about that time she, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a controversial point in the sermon, and about the time I make the point, she looks down, and there's the tarantula crawling across her leg, and she goes, ah! And she jumps up and runs out the door. Well, what am I to assume? You know, I don't want to be paranoid, but I might assume that I had said something wrong. And so, you know, the person who is the words of affirmation person, I'm going to call, if I'm that person that's the words, if I'm the one that had the tarantula in my lap, I'm going to call later and say, I want to be sure you understood that I didn't run out because of that point you made. I ran out because I had a tarantula in my lap. The person who was preaching that was the words of affirmation person, they're going to be like, what did I say wrong? You know, because it's really going to bother them that negative communication, that negative signal came back. Sherman's family and my family toured the Toyota plant a couple of years ago, and I thought it was really interesting. I think there's like 8,000 people working in that building at any given time. I don't know. It's a lot of people. And as you walk in along, there's a lot of people milling around. You can imagine working in Walmart all day. Well, not 8,000, a lot of Walmart. You know, heavy-duty Walmart. And hey, you couldn't get much work done. I can't even get to the bread aisle, you know. So, but it's very organized. And what they do, they walk up to the corner. If they come to an intersection, they're walking. They'll stop, they'll point, and they'll go this way. And they walk down there, and they come to this intersection, and they'll point, and they'll go this way. They stop pointing like a bunch of robots. You've probably been around factories that do that. Do y'all do that, Jason? Not good. Well, it gets that many people working. It works pretty good. All right. The point is that they are communicating what they're about to do. They're keeping things clear. That's good communication, and I think sometimes in the church we need to do that, so that we understand that we are not going off on a tangent over here, or not going off on a tangent over there. And words of affirmation type people are really big on that. And it's really important to them to know where we're at, to know that, you know, this person's not mad, or that person did this because of whatever. And if you're married to a person who's got this love language, then we need to be careful to not use words of affirmation against them, because criticism is really, really taken very seriously. This on the sheet that we got, the last sentence here, physical presence. Let's see, physical touch. Wait a minute. I like the way he put this. Hearing the reasons behind that love, including encouragement and reassurance, send your spirit skyward. Insults can leave you shattered and are not easily forgotten. Simple as that. Insults can. This is a case where sticks and stones may almost break bones. All right. So let's look at some Bible characters here and see if you can pick up any of these. All right, Barnabas, you remember in Acts chapter 4 and verse 36. Barnabas, his real name was Joseph or Joseph. And he was called, he was renamed Barnabas. And what does Barnabas mean? Does anybody know that? What? Yep, son of encouragement. All right? He was the son of encouragement. What do you think? Oh, I've got it up there. What do you think that the son of encouragement, what love language would you expect him to speak?
Words of affirmation,
that's what I would guess. All right. So he was also about all these apostles and Barnabas, by the way, even really an apostle, but about all those folks probably had acts of service as one of the main things. What about Lydia? Remember in Acts chapter 16, the story about Lydia? The apostles, Paul, was it Paul and Silas? And they became, they went and they preached to her and her household. And they were, let's see, Acts chapter 16 and verse 15, didn't it? Let's see, where was it? Yeah. Alright, so, and what was the first thing that, in verse 15, when she and her household had been baptized, she urged us saying, if you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and stay, and she prevailed upon us. What do you think she is? Acts of service, probably, is what I would guess. That's, you know, we don't know a tremendous amount about Lydia, but if we think about who these men were, they had just gotten out of prison. They were travelers. They probably looked like scoundrels. They weren't anybody important, but she wanted them to stay. She wanted to know if she was worthy enough for those people to stay with her. That is really a neat attitude. What about Dorcas? Acts chapter 9 and verse 36. Think about Dorcas. What was Dorcas known for? Tabitha or Tabitha? Verse 36 of Acts chapter 9. Now in Joppa there was a disciple named Tabitha, which translated in Greek is called Dorcas. This woman was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity, which she continually did. Okay, and it happened at the time she fell sick and died. And so we go on down to verse 39. So Peter arose and went with them, and when he arrived, they brought him into the upper room, and all the widows stood beside him weeping and showing all the tunics and garments that Dorcas used to make while she was with him. What do you think about Dorcas? Probably acts of service. Could be gifts, but she made the gifts, so I don't know. But she was feeding some love language, wasn't she? All right, here's another good one. That's Luke chapter 10. If you got a Bible, turn to that one. Like Luke chapter 10. I think this is a really good example right here. And this answers some questions that I've always had in the back of my mind. Now, as they were traveling along, he entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. And she had a sister called Mary, who was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to His Word. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up to Him and said, Lord, do You not care that my sister has left me to all the serving alone? Tell her to help me. And the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary, for Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. All right, so what do you think Martha's love language was? All right, what about Mary? Quality time, probably, don't you think? She wanted to sit down at the feet of Jesus, and she wanted to turn her cell phone off, didn't she? She didn't have an iPhone, I don't think. They had Androids in those days, but no, I'm kidding. But she wanted to concentrate. She wanted to look Jesus in the eyes. She wanted to hear what He had to say. Martha wanted to serve Jesus. And I always wondered why Jesus didn't really fuss at either one of them, did He? He just kind of explained things. Both of them were doing things for Jesus. And He said in this case, in this particular case, Mary's chosen the better part. All right? It's pretty interesting. What about Paul the Apostle? Anybody got any thoughts on him? Complicated, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I don't think the decisions I've made on these is just, you know, examples of it may or may not be right. And then there again, I don't seem to tell you that because you're a quality time person doesn't mean that you're not also something else. I'm just saying, looking at these things, and if you will take this with you, and this handout with you, and just fool around with it over the next couple of years. I bet you'll see that there are certain people that really, really like to receive love in different ways. And it may be that you can learn to get along with that person a little bit better if they're always doing something, doing this one particular thing, if you kind of return the favor, a little bit of reciprocation. And Jesus, you know, I'd have to ask him about Jesus. I've thought about Jesus for a lot of years in this regard. It's my opinion that Jesus is all of these. Alright? I think God is all of these. I think that they have perfect love. I think that they perfectly fulfill all the love languages. That's what I think. And I feel like that we could run through that, and I won't for the sake of time. But I want us to, we'll go back to that in a minute. I want us to understand the power of the unique love languages. Number one, and I've already alluded to this a little bit. First of all, recognize and embrace that there is differences. There is differences in the love languages. And so that people are different. Secondly, recognize that sticks and stones may break my bones, but actions, attitudes, negligence will never hurt me. That is not true. If we can embrace that in our own selves to understand that we very well can be hurt by other people's actions, and we need to brace ourselves for it. You know, if somebody comes up and gut punches you, it don't hurt nearly as bad if you're knowing that it might happen. And don't mean that you're not going to get out in the world and take a chance, but just be ready to understand that people may not understand your love language, and be ready to share it with them a little bit and tell them, you know, it really hurts me whenever you do this particular thing. And then acknowledge passive communication, because whether we're the one communicating or whether we're the ones receiving communication, we need to acknowledge that it is passive. That passive communication is very, very important. What we don't say sometimes is what we express with our face and we don't say is sometimes very, very strong. Uh-oh. That's not what I want to do. Consider how you would like to receive love and how the other person interprets love, especially if you're married to somebody or you're living in the same household with somebody or you're sitting next to somebody working with them on a church project or whatever. If you're interacting with them or you're working with them at work, they are different. And then we have got to always remember the damage that we can do by exploiting someone else's vulnerability. We've got to recognize the power of the love language is extremely powerful. You think about somebody who, if you went to Brazil, what do they speak? Portuguese in Brazil, I think. So you're in Brazil, and you don't know any language, and they just laugh at you all the time. You're just a silly thing because you just don't know Portuguese. Well, you know, come to America, hot rod. I'll laugh at you, which we do sometimes. But the point is that we've got to be careful to not hurt people's feelings and create a vulnerability, exploit their vulnerability. And so, with that, I want to turn to one more passage here, and I want to read. Actually, I got my slides out of order. Let's go back to what we started with here. Greater love has no man than this, than to lay down his life. So we know that God loved us. We know that Jesus loved us enough to lay down his life. But exactly what did it mean for him to lay down his life? You know, we were trying to figure out what is love? What action is love? Was it him dying on the cross? Of course it was him dying on the cross. But was it anything before that? Well, I think it was, actually. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3 through 8. Paul said, let's see if I can get this centered up. He says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than themselves. Look not for every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. Excuse me. Who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient, even unto death, even the death of the cross. Now, what my point is here is that Jesus laid down His life a long time before He died on the cross. And that's what He's asked us to do. He's asked us to lay down our life for others. He's asked us to esteem others better than ourselves. He's asked us to put aside what we want and to embrace what the other person needs. And if we want Provident Church of Christ to grow, if we want to grow in our marriage, if we want to be to succeed at work, if we want to get along with our neighbors, we are going to have to learn to look at what they need and deny ourselves. Lay down our own lives. That's what Jesus has asked us to do. As a matter of fact, in John 15:14, the next verse after what we just read, what we've centered this sermon around, the very next verse says, verse before says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you." And that's what He's done. He's loved me, and He doesn't mean for me to die on the cross necessarily. What He means is for me to esteem others better than myself. With all that said, and with the sound effects that are coming in from outside, I didn't do that on purpose. I didn't invoke that on purpose, I hope. I will say that you know, we need to think about these things. I think the focused study of love in our own lives, and this is not the only principles that we need to look at and study. This is just the hem of the garment on things that we need to look at. But we can convert ourselves to becoming a better Christian. We can convert ourselves to becoming a Christian. If we're not a Christian, we can just make that decision. We have that choice to become a Christian. And if you're not a Christian this evening, it'd be a great time to do that. It's very simple. We got the water full, the baptistry full of water. It's warm, and we can baptize you into Christ. And if you have been a Christian, and you've fallen along the way somewhere, you've done things that are just not appropriate, please come forward and let us help you get that straightened out. We'll pray with you and for you, get you back on the right track, get you back in good graces with God, and go on our way rejoicing, as we see in cases in the New Testament. Please come forward if we can help you in any way.